Welcome, everyone, to another Tuesday afternoon in America and Tuesday evening in Scotland and Ireland, elsewhere in the EU, where this is being broadcast on Shaken Awake Radio, PSN Radio, and SoFlo Radio, and EPGN Radio. Thanks to all of the stations, and we are all listener-supported, as I keep mentioning every week, so please hit that donate button if you like what we're doing. I am Stephen Roberts, and this is Cancel the Cabal. I want to bring up a little bit of an about section for the guests that I have. AmericanMeetingGroup.com is the group. I am having one of the presenters, one of the people from American Meeting Group on. An American Meeting Group, their assistance with your meeting projects ranges from planning and organizing your meetings to managing the invitations and attendees, including any necessary processes during your meeting, which ensure that the meeting objectives are met successfully. Whether it's a teleconference call or a moderator or a meeting with conference room, hotel rooms, good transportation, we're going to get into what the American Meeting Group does in just a second here once I welcome Bob Williams to the show. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate the invitation.
You're very welcome. I guess go a little bit into what American Meeting Group is, what the mission is.
Well, we are community developers, and we also connect our community to presenters that are in the area of history and law, and the history of law and rights, titles, and interests.
Okay. I know what that means because we have spoken before on the phone last night, but I guess go into a little bit of a history or a little bit of an explanation, what American Meeting Group does.
Well, our primary function is live events, and we have presenters in our membership community that teach on those subjects. And so we travel around the country and we bring video equipment and audio equipment and make sure that people have an opportunity to attend on live if they'd like to watch the presentation, or they can come and join us live at the meeting location. And, the presenters are primarily focused on, law and history and trying to figure out how to do a better job at establishing private property and being able to protect it as honorably and lawfully as we can.
Okay. As I mentioned, I do know what you're talking about, but a lot of listeners won't know what you're talking about. You say law, you actually mean like nature's law, God's law, or universal laws. Explain the differences between what the vast majority of people think law is and what your presenters and you teach.
Well, you have to go back to the beginning to know where it all starts. And there's a lot of different ways that people describe the beginning. Some people describe it biblically. Some people describe it scientifically. Some people have other interpretations. But there is some sort of origin, just from the concept of something out of nothing appears or emerges. And so depending on how you look at that great mystery or that phenomena, which has been examined and contemplated throughout the ages, you'll have different communities that gather around those different interpretations. And so throughout history, as people try to sort through that and figure out what their relationship is to it and what they're supposed to do about it, if anything, there were conflicts and controversies which arose, which led to trying to figure out how to minimize that and ensure that there's more stability amongst those communities, and that abilities to trade and to benefit from trade could stabilize and emerge and develop and evolve. And so along that path, it was discovered that that the human condition was such that until there was a spiritual evolvement of some sort, whether it was through, you know, religion or, you know, other contexts, other interpretations of the great mystery and how to evolve, that there would always be war and trespass and harm. And so some people would got pretty powerful and made a decision that we're going to create one version, and we're going to kind of compel those who can't avoid that trespass or that injury, or which later was refined to honor and dishonor. So who couldn't avoid dishonor, that they would need to be, methods would need to be devised to administer those people and protect the other people from them. So, from that determination, a doctrine arose called hegemony, or hegemony, as some people say. And that doctrine is that there can only be one leader and one method of governance for those, that class of people. And over time, we've had a lot of intelligence, you know, cognitive ability, and, you know, a variety of mental skills and sciences that have evolved. And so those people can be pretty smart, but they can still do a lot of dishonor, trespass and injury. And so it doesn't matter how smart you are or what you think. There's other methods of measuring that and making determinations about, if you're one of that class of people or not. And, so that's kind of a high level overview of two different places, if you will, two different standings. And one is a standing where you haven't done any dishonor to the intent and purpose of creation and for you, which you referred to as, I think you said God-given rights, and you may have said a couple of others, which...
Universal law.
Yeah, universal God's law. You know, there's people that have problems with the universe, meaning that the etymology of the words, when you break them down, you discover a lot about their intent. And there are people that would be resistant to accepting that universe or universal laws are not God's laws, but they are an extension of Roman civil laws. But nonetheless, without getting into anything granular, the basic idea is that there is a commercial legal system that the hegemony essentially has created, and it's a legal system where everybody can participate in it. And most people actually are participating in it more deeply than they may understand. So that's what we're talking about. The difference between legal and lawful is an administrative construct as opposed to a spiritually discerning and aware consciousness, if you will.
I understand what you're saying there. I've said for a long time, and I think a lot of people have also said, that the God's law just is basically simple. It's no harm, no foul. I think what it basically boils down to. But I have a question. Have you ever heard of what was an ancient system of law in Ireland? It was called the Brehon law.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Basically, people between themselves worked out their particular problems and issues between themselves, and if they couldn't come to an impasse, they would go to what was called a Brehon, and the Brehon would be the moderator, usually the leader of the clan or the little townships or whatever they were called back then. And if the Brehon couldn't come up with a solution, he had to rectify the situation out of his own pocket or whatever the case was. And I think probably somebody got clever enough to start to change things whenever that would happen.
Yeah, mediation, arbitration, often an uninterested third party has a clearer perspective and isn't polarized, you know, with the self-interest, and can observe the circumstances, can observe the evidence, and balance the equities, create a fair, just, moral, and quote-unquote right conclusion to a controversy, where in the legal system, more and more, it is just it's in the interest of the administrators, right? It's has become more and more commercial, to the point where, right, these they're just for-profit machines, and it's more about them setting corporate policies than having any kind of sacred honor or even ability to recognize when sacred honor is the appropriate measure of settling a controversy.
Well, that's the thing about about today's system, or I'm sure this goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. Maybe you can explain where the beginning of this corporate system comes from. But and also correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I've read the statistic that there are over 160,000 so-called laws on the American books. Do you know if that's a factual number, or is that off by?
Yeah, I personally don't know what the number is. I've heard numbers in the millions, though, in the tens of millions. But when you add up statutes, acts, codes, ordinances,
rules, regulations, policies, yeah.
Yeah, rules, executive orders, mandates, guidelines, it gets pretty extensive.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter whether it's 160,000 or over a million. You virtually can't do anything without breaking one of their laws, one of their corporate laws. Do you?
Right.
I'm not struggling for questions because I have plenty of them. But would you like to present the way you would for the next 45 minutes or the next 40 minutes, anyways? Would you like to go into not so much your act or whatever, but, you know, go into your presentation mode?
Well, I I don't know your audience like you do. I probably would prefer to maintain a bit of an interview style.
Okay, that's fine.
I can provide lengthier answers to your questions to try to compromise.
What, to the best of your knowledge, is the history of this corporate structure?
I'm sorry, could you ask that again?
What, to the best of your knowledge, is the history, the historical part of this corporate structured law?
Well, it's hard to be sure, because all throughout history, right, it was written by the winners. I suspect there's some truth to that. But when you read scripture and the Bible and other sacred texts, there seems to have been various empires that rise and fall under challenges by other rising empires, and you have the war that we spoke of. And can you turn this off? All right, sorry about that. We're working through some of the getting on the road issues that we're facing. Yep, thank you. So through that history, right, there was a determination that there was a certain class of people who have trouble with what you could consider sacred honor or law of peace or the ability to steward property or their lives or their communities from a spiritual discernment or from a an equitable manner that is fair and just and moral and right, what some of the equity masters have called a lofty Christian morality. And but that's not for everybody. Certainly most people don't seem to discipline themselves and develop the capability for that. So the hegemony, the doctrine of hegemony, emerged, and as a result of that, there was a kind of a quest by various regions to be the one who was going to do that. And once you kind of accept the idea that there's always going to be, that dishonor is almost inherent in the human condition. In scripture, it says, forgive them for they know not what they do. It's just you're just at a different point of development or concern. And, so once you accept that that hegemony has a function and that it has the usefulness, survival emerges, which is, that hegemony has to survive or it backslides into the war and chaos and dishonor on a large scale that previously existed. So, and then if you accept that, then the doctrine of necessity emerges, which is, you have to do what's necessary for the hegemony to survive. And so I think there's been a few millennia, probably at least, and where that particular combination has been on the table for people who are large scale public administrators. And so as they try to perfect that function for the planet, it has taken various forms, right? Like military was one form, which was just brute strength, which is kind of like the law of the jungle, right? If you don't think I'm right, I'll just beat you up or worse. Now Do You See That I'm Right? And that evolved, I think, into some other forms, and at one point became churches. Like, churches were the primary governing law form. As people evolved kind of beyond that epoch of history, it started to become commerce. And I think today we're kind of pushing the boundaries of commerce. And so that seems to be the dominant form of the hegemony, is interlocking directorates and controlling, you know, major industries and things of that nature. So, not being a scholar and just being a guy who kind of studies across the internet and listens to presenters a lot and tries to see through, all the puzzle pieces and see something that might be clear. That particular story there is one it's been hard for me to rule out.
I understand what you're saying there. I've been using an analogy for the past few months. So I tried to explain the corporate structure to people in a way that, biblically speaking, it is easier for them. God told the devil when he cast him out of heaven, he said, "You will not be allowed to attack the people of earth. You must," well, I think the devil told him that, well, if I'm not able to attack them, then I will trick them and make them give themselves to me. And another analogy also is the mythological vampire. The vampire cannot enter your home. You have to open up the door and let him in, just like the devil. The devil cannot bust into your home either. You have to open up a door and allow him to come in. It is all by contract, as you teach and others teach. Can you explain a little bit more about that, about acquiescence and contractual agreements?
Well, we certainly are creative organisms. We have the ability to create, to contemplate, to form artwork. So there's a tremendous amount of choice that we are privy to as a result of certain, I refer to them as sacred gifts, things that were granted to us by nature. And we're leveraging them pretty well. There's a lot of fascinating things that have emerged from having these gifts. And so when it comes down to, say, at least these two primary law forms, we make choices. And just as you alluded to, if you're going to waive or abandon the abundance of creation in exchange for the benevolence of a hegemony, that's a choice. And the hegemony may make it look like you don't have a choice. And when you're in commerce, you're not under obligation to do any full disclosure. They call it sales or making offers. And, you know, anybody who's bought a used car certainly knows that, they're sold as is. So you have to do your own due diligence before you accept the offer. And because if you don't, you know, you volunteered to accept the liabilities. And So just as you said about vampires, and things of that nature, you're inviting the liability into your life through your consent or through your waiver or through your laziness, through your ignoring certain disciplines that are available to you to make better decisions or to protect your decisions or to enforce against intent, criminal intent or something like fraud. So that element of making decisions and doing acceptances is a very fundamental part of growing up into adulthood and into taking, accepting responsibility for your life and your decisions and your outcomes.
Yes, yes. Well, I just got a message on my computer screen that we've only got 9.5 minutes left. Otherwise, I need to upgrade to the pro version of Zoom.
Where would you like to go?
I hadn't really known about that. What I can actually do is when this runs out of time, I can call you on Skype if you'd like to continue that way. Or I can start another meeting.
Well, we can give it a try. Yep.
Or I can start another meeting too. Send you another link.
Right. All right. How many minutes are we in?
26 minutes in.
Okay. About halfway.
Yeah. About halfway. But I would. Do you think my analogy is off as far as the devil telling God that he would have to trick people, or the proverbial vampire has to trick you to let him into your house, or is that somewhat factually accurate, do you think?
Well, again, you have different communities of people that have different ways of interpreting the great mystery. And as somebody who talks to different groups of people, I've had to kind of learn how to limit an emphasis on only one. And again, so since I'm not familiar with your audience, I'm a little reluctant to say that, I guess what I would say is I agree that is a useful way of making sense of it for some people.
Okay.
That's probably the safest way I could say it. What I try to do without, revealing my own convictions is to say if everybody would find their way to the fundamental principles, there would be a lot less confusion between the communities.
Okay. Well, the way I figure it is there are people that have figured out they have to be more clever into tricking all the rest of us into doing their bidding.
Yes, that's absolutely. And okay. That's a vulnerability to those that
You broke up a little bit.
Oh, okay. That's a vulnerability for people who don't have a strong sense of discernment. They're instead relying on what I would say are systems rather than actually being fully present in the moment and letting the moment kind of inform them as fully as it can what's going on. And
Well, Robert, you're freezing up a little bit, and you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, okay, sorry about that.
No, it's probably your cell signal.
So yeah, I don't know how strong it is because I'm seeing Zoom window only tomorrow.
Yes, I can hear you, but obviously you're not hearing me very well.
Oh, I think I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes.
Is the volume okay?
Yes.
All righty, that's good. Well, we can continue on with the recording. I'm not sure where I was at, but the last thing I remember mentioning was people figured out that they had to be more clever than the rest of us to give out the impression of authority and give out this impression of power. And you started to agree with me, and you started to say something else, but then you cut out. Would you like to expand on that?
Can you remind me where I cut out, or the last thing you heard me talking about?
No, because that's the last thing I mentioned to you, was people yep. figured out that they had to be more clever than the rest of us.
Yeah, and there's a part of us that is susceptible to magic, and I imagine that the first guy who picked up a burning branch that got hit by lightning and walked around with it had an intense reaction, especially when he figured out how to keep it lit, passing the fire to another branch, and then he was like that had to be pretty magical for most people at that point. But, you know, throughout history, things like propaganda and theater and, you know, manipulation of various sorts have a misleading effect. And when you perfect your craft, you can get pretty good at misleading and having people, I don't know, hypnotized by it or developing these belief systems that take them out of the moment and kind of have them relying on these sort of mental maps instead, where like the map really isn't the life or the reality. It's not the territory. It's just an abstraction of the life or the reality or the territory. And a lot of maps are efficient. You don't have to think much to use them. So when you figure out that you can get people to do that, you can get pretty good at getting them to do that. And I think that's been going on a long time. And so the more that they can kind of preserve the wisdom or the technology for themselves and restrict it and even limit its awareness in others, a tremendous advantage evolves.
Well, I know it's been going on a long time, Robert. It's been said, I don't know who it was attributed to have said this, but it said if you give the impression that you are powerful, then people will give you power. And the more powerful you are portrayed as, the more power you will be given.
Yeah, I believe fundamentally the power that you have and the power that somebody has over you are both your power.
Well,
until it comes to dishonor, then somebody can bludgeon you into submission.
Correct.
And kind of take your power. Yeah.
That's what universal karmic law is. They virtually have to trick us into submission, because they can't just come out and kill us and maim us and do it without our permission.
Well, that's where, you know, the consent and the honor and dishonor and people being aware and the toxic controversy that goes back through history and goes back through Bibles and sacred texts. And right, it's a long running controversy that I don't think will end soon. It just gets better and worse, like a pendulum that swings back and forth through time.
Well, Napoleon Bonaparte, Napoleon I, he was attributed to have said, religion keeps the people, keeps the masses from murdering the nobility. And I think that's virtually true. That's why they made murder illegal way back when. Because I think throughout the ages, people have tried to and wanted to get away from this feudal system, but without, for lack of a better term, killing the people that are in control, it's going to be very, very difficult to get people to stand up for themselves.
Well, and then again, if you understand the doctrine of hegemony, and if you go and kill the leaders of the hegemony, you wind up backsliding anyway. You create a vacuum, a power vacuum. And you might wind up with a worse system.
Okay.
It's a funny thing. I mean, in the story of Christ, Christ didn't appear and show us how to end the Holy Roman Empire. Right? He came and demonstrated how to avoid its jurisdiction and showed us that even when you live in sacred honor, you still have the angry mob justice that will do the dishonor. And that's why Pontius Pilate washed his hands of Christ, because he found no problem with the man. He found no duties and obligations to Rome. He found no trespass or injury. And so he had to wash his hands, which is a maxim of equity. If you seek equity, you must do equity. And all those high-ranking I can't remember what I called it in the beginning of this call, but the high-ranking public administration of the hegemony, they don't do dishonor. So what, in my research, I've seen the treaties, I've seen the testamentary trusts, I've seen the constitutions, I've seen the federal and state laws which uphold the sacred honor in those treaties and constitutions, and you'll find sacred honor through all of it. But you wind up having administrators, lower level administrators, and the lower they go, the less they practice sacred honor, understand it, even know there is such a thing. And so from the highest levels of public administration, looking down at the lower levels, they just see them as that class of people that know not what they do. They're just dishonoring each other.
Well, that's what, since the internet, actually since YouTube has come along in quite a few number of years now, 15 or 16, whatever years it's been, there have been so many people that have recorded themselves being pulled over by police and asking what their crime was. I know, and you know, for a crime to have been committed, there has to be a victim. But many people,
that's not commerce.
Correct. Yeah, that's nature's law. That's God's law. There has to be a victim for a crime to have been committed. But there's a reason why police are taught to take control of the situation and not to listen to what anyone says that they've arrested. It's because they might say something that resonates with that particular police officer. They might say something that breaks their conditioning. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I've spoken with officers that engage me in conversation, even on the side of the road. And I know there are with it, but they can't help themselves.
Well, I just wonder what percentage of them actually know that they're doing wrong, that they're doing harm to people.
Well, most of them believe that because a legislature is passing commercial codes and regulations or military codes, that it's constitutional. But I think part of the riddle is that we're in extraordinary circumstances, and so extraordinary measures had to be taken, at starting with the Civil War, carrying on with the gold hoarding in the 30s. And there was a lot of extraordinary measures under military powers to keep the peace. And so, you know, commerce is a military-occupied jurisdiction, as far as I can tell. And it's a sort of ritualized warfare.
Well, certainly it is. I think...
right, it's competitive. It's a competitive or adversarial environment. You only promote your features and benefits. You don't really put a lot of emphasis on advertising your liabilities. even in the pharmaceutical stuff where they're compelled to do it, it's just some guy speaking at the speed of sound or the speed of light, throwing in a bunch of stuff that you can't quite catch all. And you've just had all this hypnosis for 58 seconds. In the last 2 seconds, some speed reader comes flying by. It's right. So it's evident that it is adversarial, where equitable trade, right, is honorable trade, which is fair trade. You know, people are trying to do an exchange where they can win together rather than have no concern for winning together. You're just out for your self-interest. And I'm not saying everybody in commerce doesn't try to get a win-win, but I think those are artifacts of trade and equity more so than how commerce was designed, because the higher you go up the ladder in the public administration, the purer the adversarial spirit is that they bring.
Yes, yes, I understand that. I understand it. But I think a lot of people actually do believe in their minds and their hearts that they do have power, authority, and control over the rest of us. And it simply isn't true. We give it away every single minute of the day.
That's a fact. Yep. It's being waived and abandoned every day. But it's not for everybody, and there's a purpose for public administration. And, you know, to go back to the story of Christ, I think he had no interest in destroying or bringing it down or ending it, you know, the Holy Roman Empire, because there is a purpose for it. And I think he's more of a lighthouse than a tugboat. So it goes back to the choice. Do you choose that equity? Do you choose that Christ consciousness or that spiritual discernment? Right? Or is it mere foolishness or comfort food for the weak? Or another corrupt system of government? You know, like people have different interpretations.
Yeah, you mentioned that twice, Robert. What do you think could be more, what do you think could be a worse system? The Chinese system or something else?
Well, a brutal totalitarianism is worse than what we have.
The Chinese system, yeah.
Well, I don't know if I could put a country on it, because there's been a variety of them throughout history. That
correct.
Have been brutal tyrannies.
Right. That's understandable. It certainly is. Yeah, that was. There's been plenty of systems where they just come right out and told the people, you know, if you don't do what we say, we're just going to kill you.
Yep, that's tragic. That's like ultimate dishonor.
Yes, it is. Well, what direction would you like to go here? I mean, would you like to finish out for 5 minutes or so, or what would you like to expand on?
Sure.
What would you like to expand on?
Well, I sure would like to see people revisit the beginning, right? The sacred gifts that were granted. We certainly possess a unique sacred gift where we have a capacity to steward the land, the air, and the water equitably, right, honorably. And as you understand equity, that's where trust law arises, is from equity. And if we accept sacred duties of stewardship, we have an opportunity to use sacred honor to steward our private property and our lawful claims. And that's essentially what the public administration, its origins are rooted in that. Throughout history, the kings of that hegemony were considered themselves having divine rights to rule because they were honoring that sacred honor. Some of them had a harder time with it than others and fell into tyranny and fell into gluttony and those types of things. And if you study the English history, there was about 700 years of liberty charters that the consciousness of the monarchy was increasing and issuing charters to the subject about how previous monarchs in the lineages had done tyranny and how promises were being made that would stop, and the common law emerged from that, and exclusive equity, which excludes everything Roman or anything that's non-scripturally principled. And so there was about 700 years of that, a genealogy of the Constitution, if you will, where the Declaration of Independence was declaring an unincorporated trust that was rooted in those origins from the beginning, and they pledged their sacred honor to each other. They were creating a place where, as stewards with sacred knowledge, could steward the land and the air and the water and their private property, more effectively together than on their own. So they created a space. A sacred space, if you will, where I apologize, we've got an app going in the background. But so they made these pledges and created this space where they could do this better together than by, I guess, kind of accelerate the manifestation of perfection. Of what scripture would call the promised land or the kingdom of heaven on earth. And so there is a synergy or a synchronicity or a harmony that occurs when people gather around fundamental principles of honor. And the more that we can revive that awareness or revive that passion to to discipline and to prosper under the protection of equity or under the that synergy that equity creates,
I think that's going to be how people can restore their courts of honor, like common law and equity, and enforce honor under things like treaties and constitutions. So it's just a suggestion, if you will, for people to consider as they contemplate this puzzle that they're trying to fit the pieces in and try to solve it. As I look at these assemblies and these other groups that are trying to self-govern again, I see all the ego battles. I see the misinterpretations. And so they wind up dividing themselves. They wind up backsliding a year or two or even three of progress. And so it's, I know that the founders had, well, I shouldn't say I know, but I strongly suspect or I intuit that the founders had the same issues. That's why it took them a while to get to that unanimous declaration, because they had to peel off all of that that wasn't foundational principles, equitable principles.
Well, I believe that's the narcissism, the narcissistic thoughts coming into people's heads. They visualize what the system can be, and they get a ego trip, and they want to have this sort of power. There is a lot of indication, a lot of science that people are profiled into a lot of positions, and they relish this powerful feeling and feeling of authority.
Yeah, well, it's part of the animal nature to have a dominance hierarchy, right? There's your adversarial law of the jungle, survival of the fittest, right? I'll just beat you up. It's the logical fallacy of argumentum ad baculum. Or I'll hit you with my club or my taser, and now I'm right.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's why I try to, you know, inspire people to revisit sacred honor and to learn what that is and where it comes from and the role that it's played through history and the role it still plays today in things like treaties and constitutions you know, in families or communities or even your trade or business relations. Yep. I think it's important. So I appreciate the opportunity to have, you know, kind of dug into this a little bit and lifted the hood, kind of looked in there and see if there's anything, you know, we could see in this last hour. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, you know, we can talk again in the next few weeks or whatever the case happens to be able to come up, because I know we're just scratching it, but the system has been flawed and in their favor for forever virtually. You know, I mentioned earlier about it seems to be if you are more clever than somebody else, you can gain control over them. And it's always been said that knowledge is power. Knowledge is powerful. And there are so many people in this world that take advantage of that. I think you might agree with that. I'm not sure, though.
Yes. Yeah. Well, knowledge is certainly potential power. You have to have an ability to act on it. And so I think people have been disabled through generations in various ways. And it's one of the inspiring things about the internet that people are finding information faster and connecting with people that aren't local, but are on the same path and, you know, have passion and conviction, and, you know, they have archives and understandings and experiences that they can share. And over the last, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years, I think that there's been a tremendous elevation in IQ for people that are in this community, right? Like recovering more psychological stability, more understanding of esoteric ways of interpretation and philosophy, engaging in their own philosophies, and, you know, just exercising different parts of their of what they've been granted, trying to find a better way rather than just kind of accepting this is the best it can be, and I'm just doing my part, you know, going to work and wanting to be left alone in my living room and having food in the fridge. And I see a lot more people waking up and trying to improve the way they interact with the world.
Well, for me, it's always been about right and wrong, black and white. There isn't any gray areas when it comes to morality, as far as I'm concerned. And for the most part, the minions that are in control, or the cabal that are in control, it all seems to be a gray area for them.
Well, that's where controversies exist. And because the world of commerce, which is globalism, is administered by the Bar Association, they thrive on controversy.
Yes, they do.
So, yeah.
I'll leave you with just a couple of thoughts. We can end this here in about a minute or so, or 30 seconds or so. But in my college studies, I spoke to you last night about it. I started off in the IT field, but then I switched over into communications. But and I mentioned that Alex Jones was the one that provided the awakening for me, although I don't really trust him anymore. But critical thinking class, it was called CRT 205. That was my best class in the college studies of the communication, was the logical fallacies and the deceptive devices that they use on us every single day. The straw man attack, the appeal to ridicule, the red herring. I don't know how extensive your knowledge is of logical fallacies, but mine is right up there. It wasn't a perfect class. I scored 981 points out of 1,000, but, 19 points away from a perfect score is really darn good as far as I'm concerned.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's another short story, and then we can end this here. But I'm sitting here in my second day of this critical thinking class, and I'm reading about these logical fallacies, and I'm listening to Alex Jones, and he's talking about two political pundits bickering back and forth like they do on the nightly programs, you know, in air quotations, and he said that's a straw man attack. He told everybody to go look up a YouTube clip, and there it was right in front of my face, the practical application for rhetoric and rhetorical devices.
Yes. Yep, controlled opposition.
Yeah. And one more quick story, and then I'll let you go, Robert, but an Irishman, a friend of mine, he came over to America one time. He went to Chicago, and he got into his hotel, and he turned on the TV, turned on Fox News or CNN, whatever the case was, and he says, is this what you people call news? this is what we call opinion pieces over here in Ireland.
Right, and that's what it is, right? Political opinion, controlled opposition, making sure the guardrails don't go too wide, right? Keep the political discourse narrow. Two lanes, left lane, right lane, but you can't close. Or you start being called a wacko or an extremist or whatever.
A conspiracy theorist. And
a conspiracy theorist. A conspiracy factist.
Right. Well, they know by studying us psychologically, Robert, that people don't really like to be ridiculed. That's why they invented all of the rhetorical devices, in my opinion.
Yes. Well, in evolutionary psychology, if you weren't a leader, you were a collectivist, and the collectivists didn't want to get outside of the herd, they could be excluded. So, right, that's a strong will for leadership and also a strong will direct challenge to become the leader.
Yes, yes. So I thank you for coming on. I thank you for coming on and sharing the insight. And like I said, we can have communications back and forth, and we can do this again. We can expand to more.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it. Look forward to it.
All right. Have a good trip. You're going to New Jersey, you said, right?
Thank you. Yeah, New Jersey, then Alabama, then Arizona, then Minnesota, and then Hawaii.
All right.
That's what's on the radar screen.
Well.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Enjoy. Yep. Bye now.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. I know we're going to expand, but what his group, American Meeting Group, does is basically teaching people how to take their power back. So, thanks everyone for coming out. Until next time.